The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Inspiring interviews with today's top landlords. This is the Rental Income Podcast. And now, Dan Lane.
I've got a really inspiring story for you today. Joining us on the podcast from Lubbock, Texas is Chase Marbury. Chase has a great story. He has basically done every strategy imaginable for building out a rental portfolio. He started house hacking. He has done traditional 20% down payment investment loans. And in the last year, he has started doing the BRRRR strategy, where you buy a property, you rehab it, you refinance, you rent it out, and you repeat. And he has created a ton of wealth in the last year and a ton of cash flow, and things are really working out great for him. So I want to kind of walk through exactly how he got to where he is today and exactly what he's doing. So let's take a real quick break. We'll come back in 30 seconds and we'll meet Chase.
Are you looking for a roadmap to financial freedom? If so, we have a solution for you. Narada Real Estate is offering a limited number of free strategy sessions to help you get out of the rat race. Learn how you can create wealth and build monthly passive income. To set up a time with one of our knowledgeable investment counselors, simply go to NaradaRealEstate.com. That's N-O-R-A-D-A realestate.com.
So, Chase, welcome to the podcast. Why don't we start with you telling us how you first got interested in real estate?
Thanks, Dan, for having me on. I appreciate it. So I jumped into real estate before I even graduated high school as a realtor, got my license, started selling houses, and realized very quickly that if I wanted to build wealth, I needed to own real estate. So I bought my first house when I was 19. Thankfully, didn't have to have a cosigner or anything. I just went out there and found a house and bought it, did the house hacking idea. This was 12 years ago. And rented a room out to a buddy, was living there for free, and then decided to move back home and rent the whole house out, built some cash flow, kind of took off on my real estate business, selling houses, and then didn't really revisit real estate investing again for 4 or 5 more years. And then I bought my next house to live in and then eventually rent out. So that's kind of how I got my start. I knew I wanted to be in real estate from a young age. And over the years, it's just kind of evolved from sales into investing.
So how long were you working in sales before you decided to maybe step it up a little bit and do some more investing?
I guess I was probably a realtor for about 6 years and then decided I need to really start looking more into owning real estate. I guess my first rent house was, because I had sold the first one I bought back when I was 19, I had sold that years ago. So then I bought my next house was a house that I lived in for a while. And then whenever I got married in 2014, we bought our home as a couple and rented my bachelor pad out. And so that was really kind of my first rental for my modern era.
And how were you buying these properties? Was it just traditional 20% down payments?
It was the buy a house for a personal purchase. So the, you know, FHA 3.5% down on the first one, and then the second one, the conventional 5% down. And the idea was to buy a house a year, move into it, and then go buy another one and rent the old.
Wow, that's a lot of moving. So you did that a couple of times where you would live in the house to get the low down payment, and after you live there for a year, you can keep that same loan, but you can do it again. You can buy another house, and so you did that a couple of times, and then did you just figure out there was a better way that you didn't have to move so much? And so that's when you kind of figured out the BRRRR strategy.
Well, actually, from there, I started my real estate sales business, took off enough, and I was starting to actually build up some savings to start buying properties the traditional route with 20% down and 30-year mortgages. And those were fantastic because they cash flowed well. When you're putting 20% down on a house on a 30-year loan, it's cash flowing really well. Mm-hmm. And I thought I was king of the world, and this is the greatest thing. You know, I just thought this is amazing that I'm able to make this passive income. But I knew that I was going to be limited, and my goal was, you know, 10 houses in 10 years. I know that's probably a lot of people's goal, was a house a year, and mainly just because of that strategy of 20% down every time. So I started thinking there's got to be a better way to buy houses. And right out a year ago was when I first read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And I had it on my book list for years, and finally read it and realized there is a better way. There is a way to tap into financing that is non-traditional and allows you to create equity instead of putting down the equity.
You know, that's interesting, because so many people on the show got inspired to start investing by reading Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And yeah. You were kind of the opposite, where you were investing and then you read Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
It was. And it literally was like I restarted my education on real estate. I had been so focused on the sales side of things and knew everything there was, I felt, to know about sales. But then whenever I tapped into the investing side, I realized there's a whole world of things that I don't even realize, that I didn't know about. And I bought 35 books on real estate investing. I went a little crazy and read as much as I could and realized, yeah, there's a better way to do this.
So, and this is just about a year ago.
It is.
And a year ago. In the last year, you have just blown things up. You bought 7 properties in 2017.
I did. Yeah.
That is incredible.
Just exploded. My goal was 5 and I bought 7. And the goal this year is to buy 10.
Okay. Wow. Now, so tell me, when you decided that you were going to buy more houses, that's when you got into the BRRRR strategy, where you were buying undervalued houses, you were fixing them up, you were renting them out, refinancing to get your money out, and then doing it over and over again.
Yes.
Was it easy to do your first deal?
It actually was. The first deal was actually easier than I expected. I, at the time, was using a traditional bank. They still wanted me to put 20% down. And so I was using my vehicles as collateral. I was using some equity in one of the first rent houses that I had bought as collateral. And I thought, this is great. I can buy houses without using any of my own money. I can basically just, you know, 100% finance it using other assets that I own as collateral, and thought that's the way to do it. But I realized I was still going to be limited because I would eventually run out of collateral that mm-hmm. I could use. And I thought there's got to be other ways to tap into 100% financing, essentially. And I didn't really want to go into hard money loans or any of the, you know, high interest stuff. I wanted to figure out, how can I tap into the bank's money? And that's where it led me to using a credit union, because credit unions have different regulations than banks. And they were able to loan me, this credit union in town was able to loan me 80% of a projected appraised value. And so I could purchase a home that I knew ARV would be worth $150,000 after a remodel. And I could purchase it for $100,000, and if it appraised for $150,000, the bank would loan me $120,000. And so I could buy a house with no money down, nothing collateralized other than the property I was purchasing, and then they would write me a check for $20,000 at closing to do the remodel.
So they were doing the financing up front, so you weren't having to front any money or get money from another source.
Exactly.
And then
yeah.
refi, they were giving you the money for everything up front.
Exactly.
That's
exactly.
really incredible. Now, how did you find that bank or that credit union?
I actually was doing some research on all the different banks in town. I interviewed 4 or 5 different banks, and somebody suggested a credit union and said they can do things banks can't do. And so I called up the only 2 credit unions in our town, and one of them said, no, we don't really do anything like that. The other one said, yeah, we can loan 80% of a projected appraised value. And I thought, you got to be kidding me. This is just too good to be true. you're not, and I had to clarify with them several times. So you mean you don't want me to bring any of my own money to the closing table? And they said, no, you don't have to do that. And so I've bought 7 houses this year through them, and our best house we were able to purchase, they wrote us a check at closing for $44,000.
Wow.
And it's just incredible, because then you have extra capital, because if you only spend a portion of that, then you've got extra capital to go invest in another property.
Right, right. And that money's tax free.
It is.
Right.
It
so is. So now there's 2 things that really stand out with what you just said. So the first one is that you called the bank. So many people, I feel like these days, are afraid to pick up the phone, and they'll look on the website, and if that isn't highlighted on the website, they just move on. But you actually called. Now, when you called, who did you talk to? Did you talk to like a loan officer, or was it a special department you had to go to? Like, what did you do?
Each bank's different. Each bank, it kind of depends on the size of the bank and what type of bank they are. If it's a true community bank, I'm in one of my community banks. I took the president of the bank out to lunch and was able to connect with him on a personal relationship basis. Other banks, it's, you know, the loan officer is going to be about as high as you might be able to get. The one with the credit union, I've just built kind of a friendship with basically the vice president of commercial loans. Now, the interesting thing with these loans is that they're not technically real estate loans. They are business loans.
Okay.
And that's why they're able to do what they do, is because these are actually designed or intended for people who are going to start a business. And it just happens that most of the people using it are starting a real estate business.
Interesting. Okay. Wow. That's a good point. So when someone is maybe calling up a bank, would it be maybe a good idea to maybe not speak to the real estate department, maybe talk to a business department? Maybe you could find a loan like that.
Yes.
That's awesome. Now, and do they have any limits on how many loans they'll give you?
They don't, to a certain extent. They do cap. Occasionally, this bank will, because everybody in town has found out about this program, they will run out of money occasionally to loan. Mm-hmm. But they've pretty much told me if they have money to loan, as many as I want to do, I can do. And I've asked them several times, you know, based on my income and my debt to income ratio, and at what point have I over leveraged? At what point are you going to say, no, I've borrowed too much? And they haven't really even given me an answer. And I don't make that much money. I didn't come from a family with a lot of wealth or a lot of equity. You know, I mean, I've in 5 years gone from probably a $50,000 net worth to about a $750,000 net worth. And it's all from real estate investing. Right. None of it really was from my income that I could earn.
Right.
And so I thought, at some point I'm not going to be earning enough money. And they realized that. And that's part of the beauty, is that you're not necessarily qualifying on your income, because they know that you can't cover these payments if they were all sitting vacant. They base it off of your track record of ability to run your business. And they know if you can purchase properties that create the equity and rent them out and cash flow and show a good solid history of cash flow, that shows a lot more to them than your ability to go out and earn money through a day job.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So there's almost no limit, because as soon as I have a property rented, it wipes that liability off my plate and frees up more to be able to buy more.
And you know, what kind of loan terms are you getting? So with a commercial loan, a lot of times they're like 20-year terms. Like, is that what you're getting?
I am. So I've got with the credit union, I've got 20-year amortization and 10-year fixed rates, which is better than anyone else I've found in time. Most of these banks for a commercial loan, they want 3 to 5 year fixed rates, and most of them will do a 20-year term. I think I've even come across one bank that said that they would do a 25-year amortization term, but most of them are wanting, 20-year term, five-year fixed is typical. The credit union just was able to give me a longer fixed rate, and it really just depends. Relationship is everything with this business, and I know that gets said over and over, but building a relationship with your bank, having money on deposit with them shows that you're invested in them. Mm-hmm. It gives them more flexibility and freedom to loan you more money, give you better interest rates. Realizing that was a big, big change for me, was realizing I could go into a bank and negotiate. I could use the leverage of, I have X number of dollars that I could bring and deposit with you. I have 4, 5, 6, 7 friends that are investors that I will send you business. And that's one thing as a real estate agent for 10 years, building these relationships with these banks, because I was sending them a lot of business. I wasn't necessarily doing business with them. That worked a lot in my favor, because they knew if they treated me well, that I would bring a lot of business with me.
Right. Now, when you close on these properties, so you mentioned earlier that they're paying their rehab money up front. Are they giving you that money at closing, or do you have to do the work first and then they reimburse you?
It kind of depends on the property and depends on the loan amount. Sometimes they'll give it to me up front. Sometimes they hold it back and want me to submit invoices and take draws. It really just kind of depends. Okay. Early on, most of them will want to hold the money back and want invoices and I can take draws.
Okay.
The longer I've been with them, the more flexible they have become.
And tell me about the work that you're doing on these properties. Are these really extensive rehabs, or is it paint and carpet?
It depends on the property. I've had a few that we went in and did, added a bedroom, added a bathroom. We've done some remodels that were $8,000 that were just some paint and carpet and fixtures, and then get it rented as soon as possible. Some of them we've done complete gut and remodels and really fixed them up. It all really just depends on what I purchased it for, what I think it could be worth, what I think I could rent it for. And sometimes I just get carried away because I like to design and build nice things. And so sometimes I just spend more than I should.
Okay. And how are you finding the deals? Are they off-market deals, or are you finding properties on the MLS?
Early on, I was finding everything on the MLS. That was how I was taught as a realtor. And I realized that was, for a long time, I thought that's just how you find properties. And I was finding some pretty decent deals, even though they were listed on the MLS. Now I've tapped into kind of the black market of real estate, the off-market deals, connecting with wholesalers. I changed my branding this year. I went out on my own and became a broker and started my own company. And so I changed my branding to specifically say I'm an investor first and a realtor second. And because of that, I get phone calls from wholesalers and from individual property owners that need to get rid of properties. And they call me because they know I can give them options. If they wanted to list their property, I could list their property. If they just wanted to get rid of it, I could buy their property. Or I have a network of investors that I could wholesale it to. And so I've built relationships with a lot of wholesalers, a lot of other investors, and we've actually created our own little private network on Facebook that we share deals. Whenever something comes up, they'll post it on there, and somebody usually buys it within a day.
That's really awesome. So how are you getting sellers to contact you? Like, I understand the wholesalers, you've got those relationships, but right. For getting the actual sellers to contact you, are you like doing marketing?
I don't okay. market. I haven't done any marketing or advertising in probably 5 years.
Okay.
It's all referral based.
Oh, wow. Okay. So say, for example, if maybe I sold you a house and then I have a friend that is thinking about selling their house, like, I'm referring my friend to you. That's where your business is coming from.
Exactly.
That's awesome. That's the way to do it. Yeah, absolutely. Yes,
they already trust you. They already have a connection, and I don't have to explain the complexities of why I'm not necessarily the one actually buying your house, why I have someone else buying your house.
Right.
And it takes out a lot of that risk factor for the person selling the property.
Right, totally. Now, the other thing that I want to ask you about is that these properties are mainly student rentals.
They are.
Right. Now, is that a lot of work to...
It is. It started out, it was a lot of work, and it still is to a certain extent. Students tend to not be as responsible. They're a lot of times, this is the first time they're living on their own. I actually right now am dealing with a house that flooded because they were gone for the holidays and didn't leave their heater on, and the house was flooded. And so I realize I have to put up with some things like that. But for the most part, I love student renters because I get referrals, because when they move out, they have friends that are still in school that want to rent the house. So it's very easy to find replacement tenants. For the most part, I'm pretty picky and specific whenever I'm interviewing and showing these properties to the student tenants. I ask questions about their major, where they are from, and I get a picture of who they are, and I realize which ones are going to be the party students that will probably be a headache and which ones are going to be more responsible. And so I've created systems, and I've been able to hone my skills at being able to rent to better quality students. And for the most part, these students are coming from wealthy families in bigger cities. They're here to get their degree, graduate, and move, right, and get a job. And I get parent guarantors on every single one of them. A lot of times I actually build a relationship with the parents. If I ever have any issues with the kids, I can reach out to the parents and they'll take care of it. So for the most part, it really has been the benefits have outweighed the headaches.
Do the students come to you individually to rent a room, or are you getting a group of students that want to rent the entire house?
I get a group of students that want to rent the whole house. And I will allow individual rent payments so they can each pay their portion online. But we do one lease. We'll put all of their names on the lease. And we require that if one of them moves out, they're responsible for finding a replacement, or they have to pick up the extra rent. So that puts the responsibility on them.
Right.
So I don't care who's paying the rent as long as the full amount's paid every month.
That's really good as a landlord to do that. So it's a joint lease. So if you're renting out the house for $2,000 a month, if someone drops out of school, they're still responsible for that $2,000 a month.
Exactly.
The other students. That's really awesome. Well, Chase, this sounds like you got a great business. So you want to buy 10 more houses this year?
That's the goal. I'd love to get to about 15 to 20 personally that I own outside of partnerships. Starting a new partnership with a group of guys to do an investment, start purchasing package deals and larger projects with the group, and eventually get into apartment investing. But my personal goals are to get to having enough net cash flow a month to cover my living expenses, so that I'm not having to rely on showing and selling properties 30, 40 hours a week to cover my costs.
So how many houses do you think you're going to need before you get there?
Honestly, I think probably 10.
Okay.
Seven right now. I think three more houses would probably cover our living expenses and allow me to basically be retired.
That is awesome. That is really awesome. So three more houses. And then also you're doing some property management on the side too?
I am. I just hired a couple of people to help me with that. So the hope with that is to design it so that it'll be less involvement from me and be somewhat passive income. But we're currently managing 25, and this week we just doubled it to 50.
Wow. That is so awesome. Well, Chase, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate you telling your story. If someone wants to reach out to you, what's the best way for someone to get in touch with you?
You can find me on my website is just housechaser.com or on Facebook. You can just look me up on Facebook, Chase Marberry, M-A-R-B-E-R-R-Y.
Awesome. I will go ahead and put links to that on my website. You can find it at rentalincomepodcast.com/episode144. Well, thank you so much for listening. We'll be back with a new episode next Tuesday. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.